Innovation Alberta, a celebration of science, research, and the inventive spirit. I'm Cheryl Crocher. Adding to the work it has done on oil sands technology since the early 1920s, the Alberta Research Council has now developed some fancy software to help oil sands companies manage what they're doing. And whether it's search and rescue or feeding commercials to the couch potato set, there's one thing these two have in common, and it's special algorithms developed by Dr. Michael Kuritsin and his group at the University of Alberta. And the nomination deadline is coming soon for this year's Emerald Awards. Recent winners talk about what getting an emerald has meant to them. These stories coming up in the next half hour on Innovation Alberta. New technology is helping to fuel oil sands development in northern Alberta. In particular, something called SAGD, or steam-assisted gravity drainage. This allows companies to access oil sands that are much deeper than the surface deposits mined in open pits. Scientists at the Alberta Research Council have worked long and hard to develop oil sands technology, and one of those is Dr. Taufik Nasser. Among his many accomplishments over the years is some software called FRED. As Taufik explains, it's all part of a long evolution of oil sands science.
In the oil sands area itself, I started about a total of, so far, 22 years. So I started 22 years ago, but we looked at different aspects of exploiting the oil sands, different type of techniques. So we're developing techniques along the way, and also we're modifying those techniques and improving them as we moved along.
How have you seen things change?
Well, things have changed because of changes actually in the industry itself. For example, if you go back when we started to look into exploiting oil sands, at the time, if you look 20 years ago, the techniques which were used mainly were using what they called it at the time vertical wells. And also they were using techniques which in the thermal area, which I'm involved in, it is called cyclic steaming or huff and puff, where those vertical wells are used to pump steam underground and then you produce back the oil. But the technology itself evolved over the years where industry started to develop more horizontal drilling and the completion of horizontal wells. So the technology started to evolve in the last 15 years or so into the direction of employing horizontal drilling and completions.
What's the benefit of the horizontal drilling?
The main advantage of the horizontal drilling, because the horizontal well itself provides larger contact area with the pay zone, with the oil zone itself. And the people nowadays, you know, talk about horizontal wells, which are as long as 1,000 meters. So you can imagine, for example, if we have an oil zone, which is, let us say, 30 meters thick, so the vertical well will contact only 30 meters of the oil zone. But however, the horizontal well itself, if it is 1,000 meters long, then the contact area between the horizontal well and the oil sand will be much larger, and this will be one of the advantages.
Does it also allow you to go deeper than the conventional mining of the oil sands?
The techniques which are used really to exploit the oil sands, there are really two main techniques which are used. One of them, they call it surface mining, where they shovel, you know, the sand and oil, and then they separate the oil on the surface from the sand. This technique is being used actually commercially, you know, in some projects, but however does not produce most of the deposit. It is applicable only in situations where the oil sands are not very deep. They are at shallow depth. You know, you are talking about, let us say, less than 75 meters in depth. But however, when you go deeper, then one has to look into different techniques, which is, I call it, in situ techniques for producing the oil sands. And the in situ technique can produce, let us say, most of the oil sands deposits we have in Alberta.
You've been working on something called FRED. What's FRED?
FRED is really a database which... It relates really, I have to give you a little bit of background about the FRED itself and how it evolved over time. The technology we have been working on recently, it is called steam assisted gravity drainage, or SAGD for short. And the technology itself, it really combines two technologies. One of them is horizontal drilling, as we're saying, and the other one is the technology of steam injection. It combines both of them. The SAGD technology itself was tested in the field, and this was about very close to 20 years now. And the way it was tested, you know, it was a consortium between the government and a number of companies. And they did a SAGD project, which is called the Underground Test Facility, or UTF for short. And the UTF project is really the first successful project of the SAGD process. And it started operating and producing oil around 1987, and it continues to produce until to date. As you can imagine, over that very long period of time, data was generated from the project. It was coming, a stream of data coming from the field was recorded. And then what was happening, you see, to access the data coming from the field and try to analyze it and assess the data was not really an easy thing for the industry to do. Then from our meetings with industry and the discussions with them, it became clear there was a need for a tool to be able to access the field data from the SAGD easy, and also to be able to analyze and assess the results easily. Then we thought about a technique which is called a FRED viewer. FRED really, it refers to field research energy database. It's a database storing data coming from the SAGD project, and we developed a tool which is called the FRED viewer. And that tool basically, as I say, to make access and interpretation of data from the SAGD projects easier. And as a matter of fact, we are licensing this FRED viewer to a number of companies, and a number of companies started to use it.
What exactly does it do? You access data, but what does the data tell you?
First of all, access of data itself was, as I mentioned, was a big problem for the industry, because you are talking about huge volumes of data. And you can imagine, let us say you wanted to pin down certain aspect of the data you look for, then it was not easy to track it and access it. And what the FRED viewer does, first of all, it makes this access very easy. Let us say a company wants to access the oil production coming from a SAGD project. Then it is very easy to point into the oil production and access that oil production history from the field itself. And once you access it, again, the FRED viewer, what allows people to do is to try to analyze, you see, performance over time, how the wells are operating, how the wells are producing, and again, to take this data and try to forecast what to predict in the future in terms of operations of the wells.
What makes FRED different from, say, other tracking or data analyzing programs?
Well, the main difference really is ease of using it. It's very easy to use. It is user-friendly. And the difference also, you see, it is linked directly to a SAGD data set, which is the only data set, really complete data set from the start to the finish of the SAGD project. And this is the only complete data set for a SAGD project existing in the entire world, you know, and this is makes it really unique.
What's next for you, UNIT?
What we're trying to do really, because people started to learn more about the SAGD technology and they started to use it in the field, you know. As a matter of fact, if you look at the number of projects now, you are talking about a total of very close to 25 or 30 SAGD projects in Saskatchewan and Alberta. And by using the SAGD technology, people started to recognize more and more some of the issues. And what we are trying to do here, we are trying to address those issues related to the technology. And those issues really addressing things like improving oil production from the fields, to get the oil faster, to try to minimize energy requirements for SAGD projects, and also to try to minimize greenhouse gas emissions. You know, so those are the issues we are busy working on. And as a matter of fact, we have developed new technologies along those lines. And these are combining the benefits, actually, of injecting steam and also combining it with solvents. And in the last couple of years alone, we got two patents. So we have two new patents in this area, and again, we are looking into licensing those patents in the future and the technology itself.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
That was Dr. Taufik Nasser, team leader of the Thermal Gravity Processes Group in the Heavy Oil and Oil Sands Unit at the Alberta Research Council. Imagine trying to pick a needle out of a haystack or decipher something meaningful from the snowy screen of an untuned TV set. Filtering order from what seems incredibly random to the rest of us is the lifeblood of Dr. Michael Caritson's work. A professor of mathematics and statistics at the University of Alberta, he's also part of the Networks of Centers of Excellence program called MITAC, and that stands for Mathematics of Information Technology and Complex Systems. And then there's PINTS, which is short for Prediction and Interacting Systems. And to top it off, he's president of two new spin-off companies based on this mathematical work. They're called Random Knowledge and Fast Tracks Technology. What's he selling? Algorithms.
My real goal is to bring mathematics into industry, which is really the founding goal of MITAC. So I'm continuing on with the spirit of the founders of MITAC, like Nassif Kassoub, Arvind Gupta, Don Dawson. They had this vision that that mathematics is very much underutilized in industry. And this is really the end goal and the goal of what I'm trying to do. So I try to work and do mathematics at all levels, from very theoretical to applied, and bring it into practical problems to increase efficiency and effective of industrial solutions.
What are those practical problems that you're working on right now?
Well, there's a lot, because there are different ones in the center and as well in the company. Let me start off with the center. So one of our first problems, which is maybe the easiest to get a feel for the type of thing that we're doing, was motivated from search and rescue. So one might imagine that there is some type of ocean craft that's lost or missing. Maybe it's a fishing boat, or maybe there was a larger vessel that capsized and it's a dinghy or life raft off of this. And one has some idea probabilistically how this might move over time and has a model for it. And one wants to find this in real time using data and to cover the largest area possible where this vessel may be. One wants to do this from high altitude, and this means that there's a lot of noise. So one of our first applications for these techniques, these so-called nonlinear filtering techniques, was to take data that mimics this type of situation in the extreme case, so in really high noise case, and try to detect, track, and predict the location of one or many of such vessels.
So in cutting through this noise to find your lost vessel, how does the mathematics work into that?
This is a very deep question. So we would start with something that might look like a television screen that's not tuned to anything, just television noise snow. So it's completely, what we're trying to detect is completely below the perception of the human. In fact, it might be, the noise might be seven times more significant than what the human could perceive. And so we have to use actually a very classical theory of nonlinear filtering to be able to detect it, and it's an optimal theory. So what it does is it takes a model for what we're trying to detect, predict, track, etc., plus coupled with a model for what we're using to sense, to get the data in which would be fed into the algorithm. So we have to start with a coupled probabilistic model for these. And then what it does is it takes this model as well as the data in real time and produces these estimates. And it does this in an optimal way. The mathematics is coming up with the equations in non-classical settings and coming up with computer workable approximations that are very close. So proving that they're close is another example of the mathematics. The methods are essentially mathematical.
Are you dealing with algorithms?
Very much so, but they're not typical algorithms. They wouldn't be algorithms that you would learn about in a typical computer science program. We still employ computer science personnel both in the center and in the companies. However, the algorithms that we employ are in-house algorithms. In fact, these are what Lockheed Martin has filed 3 patents on.
You're involved with this in a number of different, agencies or organizations. You've referred to the center, the National Centers for Excellence. What else are you working on? Because you have businesses coming out of this too.
Oh yeah, very much. So with Lockheed Martin, which was our first corporate partner, they got us excited about this, and we've been working on these types of problems for getting close to 5 years now. So in particular, we've worked with Lockheed Martin Naval Electronics and Surveillance Systems and individuals there like Craig Poling, Ron Mahler, Tim Zajac, and John Hoffman. And there we've been interested largely in tracking problems that aren't that dissimilar to the one that I was describing. But also with other companies like Acoustic Positioning Research, we've worked on tracking a performer around a stage based upon acoustic signals. So the performer would wear some type of microphone, ultrasonic signals, and it would detect these ultrasonic signals and feed them into a computer. And then from that, we would do the tracking, the prediction, and control robotic lighting. So we actually have to predict ahead to keep lights shined on performers.
So rather than having a stagehand doing that, you could all do it all by machine.
Yeah, exactly. So the end goal is to automate it, to produce robotic lighting that can actually track and follow and do this more reliably than the stagehand and much more cost-effectively.
What would be other applications of that then, going off the stage?
There are many. We've also done work in manufacturing, in communication networks. Right now as a company, as you were mentioning, we're spinning off two companies, Random Knowledge and Fast Track Technologies. And these companies, they're interested in such problems as spam filtering, bringing in nonlinear filtering into determining what it really is spam and what is not, network security, fraud detection, medical imaging, and finance. So in many of these problems, again, what you have is you have a stream of data, and buried really beneath this is something that you want to detect. And these algorithms apply equally well to these situations as they do as detecting this vessel buried in all of this observation noise.
What else is happening now with you?
We are trying to develop products in these areas one at a time, of course. But we also have a lot of other possibilities which can help us get started and also give other companies a boost as well. For example, we've recently been down selected and in fact awarded a contract subject to final approval from NVIDIA Technologies. And here what we're doing is we're applying our nonlinear filtering algorithms to detect and track dynamic to a dynamic viewership TV viewership profiling problem. So the ultimate end goal here is to optimize commercial selection. So there would be a digital set-top box either set on top or built into television sets, and this would control the commercials that are played in the spot segment of the commercials in television.
Why would people want to control the commercials?
Well, the idea is that if you know which commercial is optimal to be played, you're hitting more of the target audience.
With your spin-off companies, you've been involved with the Venture Prize this year, and you're also doing some work with the Innovation Center. How is this going to help you?
Well, we feel it's going to help us very much. Our biggest problem in getting going would be awareness. And the Innovation Center, Venture Prize, and the university in particular, I'd like to mention Claire Leighton Morris from the university, Brad Guthrie from the Innovation Center. These are going to be key people in helping people understand the types of problems that we can solve. There really seems to be a lack of awareness outside of the defense industry about the types of problems that can be solved using the types of techniques that we have such expertise in. So we're really excited about working with the Innovation Center and the university, and also working with people, local industry leaders. And it's basically through one such individual, who I also like to mention, Ken Gordon, whom we came to contact with NVIDI Technology and have come close to obtaining this reasonably large contract from.
Well, congratulations, and I wish you all the best.
Thank you very much.
That was Dr. Michael Kuritsin, professor of mathematics and statistics at the University of Alberta. He's a researcher with the NCE's MyTech network and leader of the Pints Group. And through his two new spin-off companies, Random Knowledge and Fast Tracks Technology, he's involved with the Capital Region Innovation Center in Edmonton. There's only a few days left for people to submit nominations for this year's Emerald Awards. For over a decade, the Emeralds have served to recognize environmental excellence on the part of Albertans. Included in the categories for environmental effort are those for science, research, and new technology. At a recent gathering hosted by the Board of Governors of the Emerald Foundation, I had a chance to talk to some of the people who've been recognized for their research contributions to environmental well-being.
My name is Steve Hall, Alberta Conservation Association.
What has it meant to you and the Alberta Conservation Association winning the Emerald Awards?
We think it was a real milestone for us. One of our goals is to increase our scientific credibility, the recognition of a lot of the work that we do. And winning this award, we found to be very good to add to that, and a lot of recognition has come out of it for some of the other projects we do as well.
What are the projects that you won for?
It was a Northern Watershed project. That was a multi-year study that went on. And the second one that we were part of was a collaborative partnership that we had for the Buffalo Lake Moraine.
What word of advice do you have for other people out there who could and should be putting in nominations for the Emeralds?
You know, I think something that should be good, because to get recognition from a group of peers, from an organization like this, is just a real sense of accomplishment. For our staff, it's been a shot in the arm for morale. It's just definitely something that everybody should do to get that kind of recognition.
Thank you very much, Steve.
All right, thanks, Cheryl.
Okay, I'm Dick Peter from the Integrated Resource Management Division at the Alberta Research Council.
You're here today at the soiree put on by the Board of Governors of the Emerald Awards Foundation. What's it meant to the Alberta Research Council getting an Emerald Award?
Well, we're, of course, very proud of the accomplishment of our native plant team. It's meant for them, a boost in their morale and energy. And, of course, it helps in their profile, and that's very important for us. And in dealing with clients, they know that other people have recognized the work, and that's very helpful in terms of us being able to further develop this line of business.
What would you say to other people who are thinking that they might or might not put in a nomination?
Well, the Emerald Awards are really well recognized. It's an important event in Alberta in the environmental area. And so being nominated is important. Winning is even better. And so everybody should be participating in this. I think it's very important that everybody participates.
Thank you very much, Dick.
Thank you very much. Thanks, Joe.
My name is Jay Usari. I'm a plant breeder with a native plant group at the Alberta Research Council.
You won an Emerald Award last year for the work that you're doing. What is the work?
The work is on developing native plant varieties for reclamation and habitat restoration.
What's it meant to you, winning that award?
It's a very good feeling. It's beyond description. But it does give your work importance, and it's good to be appreciated by the industry. And it's good to be on the receiver side, to be on the other side of the fence. So it's a very good feeling, happiness, joy in the work. So I think, overall it's pretty good.
What was it like standing up on stage making your acceptance speech?
Could not believe it. It took me a couple of minutes before sink into my mind that, I actually won. And once I got on the stage, I still could not believe it. took me maybe about a day, you know, to really sink into my mind that, hey, you won the award.
Thank you very much.
Oh, you're welcome.
My name is Paul Hunt, and I'm chairman of the Board of Governors of the Emerald Foundation.
The Emerald Awards has been going for a number of years now. What do you see as being the importance of this?
Yes, it's been going for 12 years, and through the efforts of volunteers, the sponsors, we are creating a groundswell, I believe, for environmental excellence. We have 12 different categories in the awards, ranging from individuals to organizations, big and small, for-profit and not-for-profit. And nominations in these various categories have occurred for 12 years. We have over 100 each year. And we're growing. We're getting more known.
What would you say is the importance of getting the recognition from the Emerald Foundation?
There's a lot of good work going on in Alberta. And by recognizing good work, I believe it encourages others to do likewise. And it gets the word out. Many people just aren't aware of what they can do personally to reduce their environmental footprint. And by using perhaps some of these award recipients as role models, I think it provides a fabulous guide for people generally in Alberta.
One of the areas that you've helped champion is the Climate Change Award. Tell me a bit about that.
Yes, climate change is a very, very complex and significant issue which we in Alberta, as well as Canada and the rest of the world, are having to deal with. I thought it was very appropriate for an award to be created to recognize excellence and a proactivity in either reducing emissions or promoting better lifestyles that in turn conserved or was more efficient so that less emissions would be produced.
When's the deadline for nominations?
The deadline this year for the 2004 awards is the 29th of February, the last day of the month.
Thank you very much, Paul.
You're more than welcome.
That was Paul Hunt, chair of the Board of Governors of the Emerald Foundation for Environmental Excellence. If you know of any individual, group, or company worthy of recognition for their effort to do something better for our environment, you'll find the nomination form online at emeraldawards.com. That brings Innovation Alberta to a close for this week. The interviews you heard during this program are posted as audio files and as written transcripts on our website at innovationalberta.com. And you can keep up to date on technology and research events by subscribing to our weekly newsletter, Innovation Alberta Online. Innovation Alberta is sponsored by the Alberta Research Council, the Capital Region Innovation Centre, the National Institute for Nanotechnology, Alberta Pacific Forest Industries, Japan Canada Oil Sands Limited, the Sustainable Forest Management Network, the University of Lethbridge, the Alberta Heritage Foundation for Medical Research, Alberta Conservation Association, Alberta Ingenuity, ICOR, the Informatics Circle of Research Excellence, and the Health Sciences Association of Alberta. Innovation Alberta is mixed at Riverdale Recorders and is a Porcupine Stone production. I'm Cheryl Croucher.